Hey guys, welcome to a new episode. That's right, a new episode of Saw Something Scary. Derek Zhu and Jeff Wright back in the studio with you. Jeff, what's up, buddy? How are you?
I'm doing okay, man. We, on behalf of the Saw Something Scary family, we express our condolences to you. I know that was there's been too many deaths in your family this year, man. We're sorry.
Oh, man, I appreciate that. That's very nice of you to say. Yeah, it stinks to have to take a week off to deal with that kind of stuff. But hey, we're back and we got a brand new edition for you. Just trying to fill my vanilla ice quota for the day.
Yeah, good deal.
Yeah. You know, 2020 sucks, so I don't have any trailers. So I guess we can just skip that and go straight into this week's
horror. Yeah, man. So, you know, I knew you were dealing with some really important stuff, and I don't want to minimize that at all or pretend like mourning is over for you. But on this item of news, the first time I saw it, you were the only person in the world I wanted to talk to about it. Marty Jannetty killed a dude.
With a Triton.
I really don't know how professional wrestling manages to continue to get weirder and weirder.
Yeah.
But it does.
Yeah. Have you read the recent reports where Jannetty says, "I never said I killed him. I just said he disappeared."
Yeah. Yeah. Good luck with that, Marty. Good luck with that, Marty. Yikes. Like, well, I saw that the Columbus Police Department had start opening an investigation of him.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I guess we need to clue the listeners in just in case they don't know. And I'm so sorry, listeners. I hadn't talked to my friend Derek in a while, and I kind of jumped in. I guess I met Marty Jannetty when he was tag teaming with Shawn Michaels in the Rockers.
Yeah, yeah. So Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty, to give you your nerdy wrestling history lesson for the week, Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty started tagging, I believe, in the late 80s in the AWA as the Midnight Rockers. They were eventually signed to Vince McMahon's WWF. And they almost were immediately fired because they went to I guess they went out to the bar like wrestlers did, in those days. And one of the wrestlers said, "I hear you guys like to party. Let's party." And the way Shawn Michaels tells it is this guy kept like egging him on. So Shawn finally grabbed a beer bottle and broke it over his head and was like, "There you go. You know, idiot. Are you happy?"
Right.
And then I think 2 or 3 days later, Vince brought him into his office. He greets him at the door. He sees their snakeskin boots and he goes, "Ha ha, those are nice boots. They're made for walking, you know."
Oh, wow.
And all of the color drains out of Sean and Marty's face. Vince gives that laugh again. "I'm just kidding, pals. Come on in here." And then he fires him.
Oh, my gosh. That's the most Vince McMahon story ever.
Yeah. That lasts for, I think, 6 months to a year, something like that. They go back to the AWA. They also go to the Continental Wrestling Federation, which was in Alabama and Tennessee. So, dude, if we'd have been just a few years older, we could have went to some podunk Tennessee town and seen Shawn and Marty wrestle in the late 80s. What could have been?
Yeah, thanks a lot, history.
Absolutely. And so then Vince hires them back, and they go on to have a great run as a tag team. They actually won the WWF tag team titles on a taping of Saturday Night's Main Event, but the top rope breaks off. It's a 2 out of 3 falls match for the Hart Foundation. The top rope breaks off in the middle of the first fall. No one ever fixes it, but Shawn and Marty still win the titles. And then I think a week later, Vince tells them, "We can't use that on TV, so they're just going to go back to the Hart Foundation." And they never win. They never officially win the tag titles after that.
Wow. I didn't know that either.
Yeah. 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 And they stayed together as a tag team until late 1991, maybe early 92. And then on an episode of The Barbershop with the Brutus the Barber Beefcake, a pleather-clad Shawn Michaels turns on Marty, and Marty can't take the punishment from HBK, so he just throws himself through the barbershop window.
Like a coward?
Like a coward. Yeah, he was just trying to jump out to get away.
I mean, seriously, like one of the seminal events of my wrestling fandom as a child.
Yeah.
That scene, Earthquake setting on Hulk Hogan and sending him off. And that may be it, man. Like, those are like the most catastrophic turns in my young childhood.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just getting into professional wrestling when Sean threw Marty through the barbershop window. As a matter of fact, I don't think, no, I knew that retroactively. So, So Sean throws Marty through the window. Marty has some drug and alcohol issues, shockingly, that come up. He gets fired. They bring him back later that year in like September or October. He shows up on a random episode of WWF Superstars. He comes in from out of the crowd. You know, back when like you could have surprises and not, they weren't going to hit your theme music, you know, before you came out. And he goes to hit Sean with this big mirror that Sherry Martel, Sensational Sherry, had been using for Sean to, you know, be able to primp and preem in front of. He goes to hit Sean with it. Sean pulls Sherry in front of it, and Marty just cold cocks Sherry Martel. And that's how I was introduced to Marty Jannetty.
Another good angle, man.
Yeah.
You mentioned Marty has problems, and you know what brought this up is evidence of that, but man, the guy at one point was as hot as they came in wrestling and could really work, apparently. You know, better than I do, but I hear some of the old timers talking about how like Marty and Sean were doing stuff that nobody else had ever done when they were working as a tag team.
Yeah. Well, you know, I just listened this over the weekend. I listened to Chris Jericho has a new episode of his podcast, Talk is Jericho, up with Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard. And Arn and Tully both were like, the Rockers are the best team we ever got in the ring with.
Yeah, that's probably where I heard it. I know I heard it on some podcast, and I bet I listened to that one too. So, yeah. And it just stinks that, like, I mean, Jannetty has become a byword, right? Like, there was even an angle, I think, with The Miz a couple of years ago where after a tag team he was on broke up, he, like, the whole angle was, I'm not Jannetty, and I'm going to prove that I'm not Jannetty.
Yeah.
Because Sean goes on to become the best wrestler of all time, and Jannetty goes on to embarrass his family and himself.
Yeah.
Regularly.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I mean, that's unfortunately, that's true. Every time it felt like that Sean and Marty were going to, you know, really start up their feud and really get it going, something happened with Jannetty and he wasn't able to finish it out. The most that it got was in 1993 on a random episode of Monday Night Raw in May of 1993. Again, Marty Jannetty walks out through the crowd. He's got a hood on. And he's got sunglasses on. And he just walks down the ring. And, you know, Sean is the Intercontinental Champion at the time. And Sean is saying, like, you know, no one could beat me. I'll, you know, if there was anybody worthy, I'd put this Intercontinental title on the line tonight and wrestle whoever. And then Marty comes in and challenges him for the title. And they have a match on Raw that blew little 7-year-old Derek's mind just at how good it was.
Yeah.
And it wound up being the match of the year. Like, I believe the Wrestling Observer gave it match of the year, if I'm not mistaken. I know for a fact that Pro Wrestling Illustrated voted it match of the year.
I'm going to have to track that down then.
Yeah, it's the same. Here's a little history for you as well. It's the same Monday Night Raw where the kid who had been a jobber for the majority of the episodes of Raw, the kid beats Razor Ramon. And that was like the most shocking thing that had happened, you know, on TV at that time. Hmm. So it was an action-packed hour of Monday Night Raw.
Yeah, yeah. Well, guess bring it directly to what went on. At this point, Marty Jannetty is 60 years old. Does that sound right?
Yes.
And I guess he had a bad heartbreak. The post in question, which was on Facebook, I believe, references a young lady or a lady who has broken his heart. But I'm just going to read it real quick for listeners who may not have seen this. So Marty Jannetty updated his status and he wrote, I never told no one this, even my brother Gino, because Gino would have killed him. And I didn't want my brother gone. Heck, he'd only, and I'm self-editing there. Yes, Marty did not say heck. He'd only recently come home from Vietnam. And I was 13, working at Victory Lane's bowling alley, buying weed from a blank that worked there. And he put his hands on me. He dragged me around to the back of the building. You already know what he was going to try to do. That was the very first time I made a man disappear. They never found him. They should have looked in the Chattahoochee River. But Winnie, the girl in these pictures I referenced previously that are part of the post, I likes you so blank much, probably my favorite, but I promised myself way back then nobody would ever hurt me again. That includes you. I loved you, but you hurt me with your blank Jamaican jealousy. You can go your own way. I don't need you. I think maybe the take-home lesson immediately is social media is maybe something we want to roll back and rethink. I don't think this is good for Marty Jannetty. And if this is how we're going to get murder confessions now, I don't think I want to be in that world.
I can't wait for the Unsolved Mysteries episode on Marty Jannetty.
We will definitely cover that for our Patreon peeps, like we did with our recent Unsolved Mysteries 2020
yes.
Patreon episode.
Yes.
Yeah, I much more want this to be happening in like some interrogation room with authorities that are there. I mean, I'm being lighthearted about that. If Jannetty really killed somebody and this isn't just running his mouth, I'm sure that family would like closure and are happy that Marty was crazy enough to do this. But there's just something about social media that I don't think it's fixing things. It's not helping.
Yeah. Yeah, it's – and I'll tell you this, Jeff. That's not the craziest – Facebook status I've ever seen from Marty Jannetty.
Are we referencing the one about his daughter?
Yep.
Yeah. So that's part of the sordid decline of Marty Jannetty. You want to clear our listeners in if they don't know? It's pretty gross, guys. You're going to want to gargle bleach.
Yeah, this is really rough. Marty Jannetty put up a Facebook post several years ago saying something to the effect of, I just found out this girl that I have treated like my daughter for years wasn't my daughter. And boy, howdy, do I want to get to know her in the biblical sense. But would that be too weird? Because for the longest time, we thought we were daughter and father. But we both want it. So what should I do?
Yep.
And I think that really should just tell you everything you need to know about Marty Jannetty. And maybe that ought to wrap up this portion of the show.
Maybe. This is straight up horror.
yeah.
This guy, I mean, really, it's truly sad. Like, Marty is not a functioning adult on his own.
No.
But this is just buck wild crazy stuff that fits in the Horror Reporter. And the Columbus, Georgia Police Department said, yeah, we're going to look into this. And so they're going back through missing persons and unidentified remains cases to kind of match the time frame and details of the story. So, I mean, more may come out of this.
Yeah.
He deleted the Facebook post, too, which is just such a funny move. I mean, it's on every website in the world when you Google his name, but
he
deleted the post.
I ain't got a paper trail now. We're good.
Ninja vanish.
Yeah. Yeah, man. He is he's an interesting cat. I don't know if you saw it or not, but I put those screenshots up on my personal Facebook page. And I said, who would have thought throwing Marty Jannetty through a barbershop window would have actually made Shawn Michaels the biggest baby face in the world?
Good point. Good point. I mean, honestly, maybe we need to reevaluate that Matt Hardy stole the broken gimmick from Marty Jannetty. We've been thinking he was some great innovator. He's just been a copycatter.
Yeah. Yeah. That's funny. And horribly sad at the same time.
For sure. That's not all the sad news we got from wrestling this last 7 days, though, right?
Yeah, unfortunately, man. We found out last night that James Harris, otherwise known as Kamala, the Ugandan giant, he passed away last night at the age of 70. And Kamala, man, was probably one of the first wrestling villains that I was terrified of when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I mean this without any humor at all. I'm really thankful to hear a prominent professional wrestler who made it to 70, at least from that era, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Now, Kamala had his share of medical trouble and hardships and things like that. But
really?
Yeah. He began suffering from diabetes in, I believe, 92. And eventually in like 2007, 2008, they had to take one of his legs, and then eventually they had to take both of his legs.
Oh, yikes.
So his last few years weren't the best, you know, but
wow.
But dude, unbelievable character in the professional wrestling world. I watched this YouTube video on him last night. It was like a mini documentary that Bleacher Report put out. And James Harris, Kamala, he says, like, I never really wanted to be a wrestler. I wanted to be a truck driver.
Really?
But yeah, he said, but there weren't many truck driving jobs back then. And they, you know, somebody said, well, you're a big boy. You should get into wrestling. So I got into wrestling. And do you know who made that Kamala character, like who created that Kamala character?
No, but I've got a follow-up question on this once you tell me, if you'll be so kind to do so.
Yeah, Jerry the King Lawler.
Oh, yeah. I mean, no kidding. Jerry the King Lawler is maybe one of the more creative people I've ever heard of. I mean, painting the stuff with Kaufman, and just all the gimmicks and whatnot, storylines, angles.
Yeah.
I'm not really surprised by that. I mean, it's interesting to know, but knowing how creative the King is, I guess it squares up.
Yeah, for sure.
I wanted to ask, if you don't mind, was Kamala a knockoff of Abdullah the Butcher?
You know, that's a great question, man. I've never really thought about that before, but I mean, that would seem like that could be the case.
It does seem, I mean, nobody worked other than Foley and Terry Funk. Nobody worked with as much color as Abdullah did, you know? Mm-hmm. He really lived up to the Butcher gimmick, but I think in my mind, I was an adult before I separated the matches I had seen with Kamala and the matches I had seen from Abdullah
the Butcher.
Yeah, and I just thought that there were times where Abdullah didn't work with knives and sharp objects. Could be my own failure. I'm just curious.
Yeah, I mean, that is a really interesting point. I wonder if that's what Lawler was trying to do in that situation, was trying to bring, you know, an Abdullah-type character to Memphis without having to bring in Abby.
Sure.
Yeah, I don't know, man. That's an interesting question. I know. I mean, there are definitely some similarities. You know, they're both African-American men. They're both bald. They both, you know, they weren't promo guys. Yeah, I guess really, when you look at it, he is kind of the PG version of Abdullah the Butcher.
Yeah, I know that there's the trope. I mean, it's in Hollywood. It's everywhere, of like the violent outsider from, you know, the dark continent of Africa or whatever.
Right.
So maybe it's just that they're in the same trope family. But
yeah,
there was something in my young brain anyway that just didn't understand the intricacies of how wrestling worked at that time that united the two in my mind.
Yeah.
If I ever get a chance to talk to one of the OGs, I'll throw that at him.
Yeah. Yeah. That is interesting. It does also show you how inherently racist professional wrestling used to be. I think they're trying their hardest to get away from it now, but like I went back and watched, I guess probably my favorite, quote unquote, favorite Kamala match was from Wembley Stadium at SummerSlam 92. So I watched that last night. And as Kamala's coming to the ring, Harvey Whippleman announces him from the darkest parts of Africa. And I was just like, holy smokes.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. There's a lot of that.
Yeah. Which, I mean, you know, I guess if you really look at it, like that whole gimmick is somewhat racist.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely depends on a very negative stereotype that nobody wants to see perpetuated.
But the man did, you know, the man did a lot with it. He headlined everywhere he went. He sold out, you know, he had a great, I think, about a 6-month run with Hogan in the WWF when Hogan was Hogan, you know,
at
the top of his game.
Yeah, that's what I remember him from, really.
And then Hogan helped bring him into WCW, and he had that god-awful run with the Dungeon of Doom. And then I think, if I'm not mistaken, they asked him to lose to Randy Savage at Halloween Havoc 95, and he said, nope, I'm out, and just left the company.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wouldn't do the job for Macho Man. Thought that would be condescending. That's stick to your guns, pal.
Yeah. And then he would pop up every once in a while at, you know, in the WWE, you know, with little cameos and stuff, of course, until he couldn't walk. And then we lost him yesterday. So like you said, it's nice to hear of someone making it into, you know, past the back nine of life in professional wrestling, especially in that generation of wrestlers. But, you know, I think I read something this morning where it could have been COVID related that he passed away.
Sure.
And so just another reason why this year sucks, man.
Yep. Co-sign on that. But it is good to be talking to my friend, Derek. And I think that has kind of exhausted all the preemptory material, right?
Yeah, I think so, my man.
Are you ready to pull the curtain on 2020's You Should Have Left?
Yeah. Let's do it. Let's rename this thing to You Shouldn't Have Watched This Movie.
Man, you're stealing my jokes here. And I was wondering when you thought you should have left the room where you were watching this.
Oh, dude. I think, well, hang on. Wahlberg!
What? No!
Spoiler alert.
I think for me, it was when we had a dissertation on the female orgasm. I think that's when I was like, maybe we should have picked a different movie.
Wasn't what you signed up for.
Huh? Yeah. Yeah. Not at all.
Thought you left all that behind in like middle school health class.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although if that was in your middle school health class, you should probably hire a lawyer.
Yeah. Like I got in trouble for talking to the girls in fifth grade about their puberty class. And now I'm having to watch Amanda Seyfried, Seyfried, whatever her name is, go through all that talk again. Just brought back bad memories.
Sure. Sure. I think there, you know, that's a pretty negative lead in there. I think there for a while I was into this movie and it was meant for cinematic release and made its way to home video. So even as a Blumhouse product, it's just a little bit higher quality than what we've been getting in this movie starved time.
Right.
I think there could be a good movie made from these elements. I just think this one missed the mark.
Yes.
Speaking of when did you realize the creepy guy in the trucker cap was Kevin Bacon?
From the very beginning.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
I mean, he just sounded like him.
Okay. See, you're just better at it than I am. I thought this was going to be somebody who showed up in a different form later. I didn't realize it was Kevin Bacon.
Yeah.
Until we see him confront Kevin Bacon. I'm like, oh, that's going to turn out to be Kevin Bacon because the plot is going to require that.
Yeah.
When did you know that he had killed his wife?
For me, when she jumps on him or whatever that demon naked lady was that jumps on him and vomits the water.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's right around the same time. When I saw her in the bathtub and the little girl like discovers her, I was like, oh, he must have killed her. That's the only reason she's showing up in Hill House here.
Yeah. But I think I started to feel like that this was going to be some kind of allegory for purgatory when they're hammering home the what happens when we die.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. That I actually hadn't thought about it, but that makes a lot of sense. That was telegraphing.
Yeah. And when Kevin Bacon is very uneasy about, oh, yeah, we'll all be together in heaven. Like, I feel like that is I'm trying to figure out the right way to put this. I feel like that is something that is said regardless of your faith.
Yeah, for right? sure.
Especially to a little child.
Yeah.
Like, hey, yeah, we're all going to go to heaven. We'll all be together again. You know, and just the way that he said it with the uneasiness, I was like, oh, there's going to be more to that. And then it just kept popping up.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay. So this is where we're going.
Yeah, that makes all kinds of sense. And honestly, I'm going to kind of tip my cap to the movie because that's kind of characterization that I was just not picking up what they were throwing down, you know, that this guy knows he's a murderer, that he's not looking for, you know, like his hope is in heaven. His hope is that somebody just blows the candle out when it's all over.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. That's good. That's good. I missed that. I'll tell you something else I missed that I'm actually glad because it would have set my expectations too high. I mean, I knew this was Kevin Bacon, but I didn't realize he was working with David Koepp, who he did Stir of Echoes.
Stir of Echoes. Yeah.
That would have made me too much excited for what I got with this movie, you know?
Sure.
I actually didn't know much about Koepp, but apparently he was the screenwriter for Jurassic Park, Mission Impossible, and Spider-Man with Toby. Did you know that?
David Koepp?
Yeah.
No, I didn't know that. You were about to blow my mind if you said Kevin Bacon.
Oh, did I say Kevin Bacon? My bad.
No, well, you just said he pronouns, pal. So I wasn't for sure which one.
Yeah.
No, but back to your original question, I did not know that about David Koepp. That's a heck of an impressive resume, though.
Yeah, and if you tag Stir of Echoes on as more completely just his film, because I think he wrote and directed, that's not a bad run. But this film just doesn't live up to it either.
Yeah, it definitely does not, man.
I will tell you that I was a little hot under the collar in an angry sense when we are immediately thrown back into a movie where the dude is supposed to be husband to this wife who should actually be his daughter.
Yeah.
But they accounted for it and explained it and used it to create dramatic tension. And they kind of saved it. They kind of redeemed it as a plot point. But I immediately was thinking of that. It's the one I always go to. It's got Nick Cage in it, and he's with an actress who's much younger than him, and they play parents who go crazy.
Oh, yeah. That feels like every Nick Cage movie, honestly.
Anyway.
Didn't we just review one of those like a couple months ago?
Mm-hmm. We've done one recently. I kind of hate the trope. And like I don't throw this term around super often. I try to be limited in the accusations I lay out, but it just feels super sexist.
Mm-hmm.
That every guy's going to have some trophy wife whenever he wants it. But at least in this one, that shows that there's complications and challenges and weirdnesses that come from it. So
yeah,
I'll tip my cap to Cup, or however you say his name.
Yeah.
Kip.
It was, it was even something that we had brought up in when we talked about the trailer for this thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, how can, I think 62-year-old Kevin Bacon, you know, be with a woman who's a year younger than I am.
Is she really? I didn't realize that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Footloose came out in 86, and that was the year that Amanda Seyfried was born.
Unreal.
Yeah.
Unreal. Well, I'll say this, like, apart from the creepiness of the trope that was actually handled fairly well in this one, Kevin Bacon's doing all right for a man of his age.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah. Yeah. We should all be so lucky to be in our early 60s and look that good.
Yeah. I mean, the skin sagging, there were like quite a few Kevin with no shirt on shots. And I was like, I don't know that we need these.
Yeah.
But having sat through them, I was like, yeah, I mean, the skin isn't as tight as it used to be, but you've kept your boyish figure, sir.
Yeah, for sure. I need to correct myself. Footloose came out in 84, and that was the year that she was born.
Okay.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. She is my age. She was born in 85. I apologize. I'm all over the place today. Sorry.
The point stands, I think, that this guy was at the height of his career when she was nursing.
And diapers.
Yep. Now, in a much more healthy and holistic way, I did think the little girl in this movie was super precious, and I would like to adopt her if anybody's up for that. I would like for her to be a Wright daughter.
Hey, man, I'm going to go out and say I thought she was the best actor in this entire movie.
She was precious, man. I cared about what happened to her. I hurt for her. I wanted her parents to quit being stupid. I wanted to, like, take her and my other daughters for a walk, you know, out on the grounds and throw Frisbee with her. Like, she's just charming and sweet.
Yeah.
And in a lot of ways, she makes the movie work, because while I don't particularly care for Seyfried's character, and ultimately Bacon's character isn't, there's just not a lot there, mm-hmm. you know,
mm-hmm.
I really cared about that little girl.
Yeah. Yeah, I did too. She really is the emotional center of this movie. And it's crazy to me to think that she only had one other acting credit besides this, and that was she played young Claire on Modern Family.
Huh. I've actually never watched Modern Family. Have you seen that one?
I have not seen that episode with her in it. I have seen sporadic episodes of the show. But yeah, if you want to track it down, she was in season 10, episode 13 of season 10.
Hmm. Well, she's precious, and she did a really good job of being that on screen.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that in like 30 years, I'm not watching a movie with her and Zac Efron, you know?
Yeah.
But she's great. She was sweet. And yeah. Honestly, it's the only thing I really cared about in the movie. If she hadn't have been around, I'd be like, can the house eat these people? Can it then fall in on itself? Cool.
Yeah, there really wasn't a lot of meat on the bone for this one. Like, I feel like...
Mm-hmm.
It's based off a novella,
mm-hmm.
and I feel like that we got a novella of a movie.
Sure, sure. I could not be with you more. I almost feel like this would have worked better as a short
mm-hmm.
in an anthology series. Like, we need three less scenes of Kevin walking around in rooms that didn't exist a minute ago.
Mm-hmm.
One would have been enough to get the point. They could have stuck it into, like, Into the Dark on Hulu and said, this is the holiday where you get away from stuff movie.
Yeah.
And
this is the holiday.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it would have been better. It's just, like you said, not enough meat on the bone, and it's just stretched too thin.
Yeah.
You basically need them getting there. You need the stuff about the tension in their marriage. You need the scene where he walks away trying to lead his daughter out of the village. You need the encounter with the shopkeeper. You need one version of, hey, rooms aren't where they're supposed to be. And you need the conflict with Dark Kevin Bacon. And yeah, I think you could do that in like 45 minutes.
Yeah, I think so. I really do. You really do feel the padding of runtime on this thing, where they're like, okay, well, we've only got really 35 minutes worth of story here. So we're going to have to make do with another, you know, 55 minutes worth of stuff. So yeah. let's show him being super jealous because, you know, she's so much younger than him, and let's have conflict in the marriage, and let's have multiple nightmares and all that stuff. And it's just there's nothing happening to want to keep you. I feel like, and gosh, Jeff, how many times have we said this? I feel like that they said, hey, we've got a kick butt ending, and we're just, and it doesn't matter what we put out there. This ending is going to make people jump out of their chairs and go, oh my God, I can't believe that's the ending of it. And that's all we'll need.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's so interesting as a point, because this is the counterpoint to those movies we've seen, like The Turning, where we're like, you didn't have an ending, so you just ended the movie.
Yeah.
Like, somehow we need to wedge "you should have left" onto The Turning, and you might have a complete movie.
Yes. Yes.
That's an interesting point. I mean, really, honestly, though, none of the elements of this movie feel all that new to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you mentioned it. It's based on a novella. We've talked about this on the podcast before, but it's been a while. There's a 2000 book by, what's the guy's name? I think Daniel Lewski, called House of Leaves. Have you ever read that?
No, I don't think I have.
It's a really interesting book. Again, it's from 2000, but it's a lot of stuff. But one of the major components is a house that eventually people living in it discover the dimensions are changing.
Oh, so this is the one that the author sued these people for plagiarism.
Oh, is it really? See, that makes a lot of sense, because it's clearly playing off the exact same idea.
Yeah, let me double check my facts on that just to make sure. But House of Leaves, Mark Daniel Lewski, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So Daniel Lewski later has criticized the film of plagiarism.
Well, he's right in specific that, you know, there's a scene where Bacon gets a tape measure and he measures the inside of the house versus the outside and they don't line up.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically how the strangeness of the house in House of Leaves is introduced to the reader.
Oh, wow.
It's almost cut and paste. House of Leaves is a really interesting book. It's a great, like, take it to the beach book for any of y'all who are going to do a fall or late summer beach trip. And it's 100% better than this movie, working on the same concepts and premises, plus a whole lot more. I mean, if I were on the jury, I would award money to Daniel Lewski or whatever, however you say his name.
Yeah, I guess he didn't sue them for plagiarism, but he did. Like, I guess a critic said, hey, this looks a lot like House of Leaves. And then Daniel Lewski himself came back and said, yeah, that seems like plagiarism, pal.
I would agree. I don't know if Daniel Lewski's written anything since then, but House of Leaves won a bunch of awards and I feel like made his reputation. So maybe he's got the kind of money that you don't care about that stuff. But it really is I got to say, it's more than a riff. It's like an aping of House of Leaves. It's just that House of Leaves is better.
Yeah.
And the reality is, I don't think you could ever make a movie out of House of Leaves. I'm not going to spoil it for people who haven't read it, but it just seems unadaptable. Maybe that's what these people were thinking, like, how do we do House of Leaves without having to try to do House of Leaves? I do have objections built on the house, though, speaking of the house. Can I run through some of those with you?
Please.
Who picks that house to stay in?
The devil,
yeah,
guess.
I guess that's right. And actually, I'm going to come back to that. But I was just thinking, like, romantic or restful or exciting getaway in the Welsh countryside. And they pick basically a stainless steel oven.
Mm-hmm.
It couldn't look more out of place in that Welsh countryside if it were floating off the ground.
Yeah.
I guess some people are into modernist and brutal architecture, but I look at that and I'm like, I don't want my daughter there. She's gonna cut herself on some of the furniture. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's all sharp edges. And like, the kitchen's designed clearly to be like, screw you for wanting a kitchen. And the laundry room's like, screw you for having dirty laundry. Speaking very much as a dad right now. I look at that thing and I'm like, nobody picks that place, man. You want something with some brick, maybe grass on the roof. If you're going to the Welsh countryside, you want to look like, you want to live somewhere that looks like a hobbit built it.
Yeah. So can I blow your mind real quick?
Yeah.
That is a vacation home in Lancaster, Wales.
No kidding.
It was designed by famed British architect John Pawson, 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 and completed in 2016. So I don't know if it's on Airbnb or not, but I mean, you can. It's called Lifehouse.
Lifehouse?
Lifehouse. A vacation.
Well, that's
home.
Ironic.
Yeah, in Lancaster, Wells. And I may be pronouncing the name of the town wrong as well, but.
Well, I do think, honestly, that when they came to the question of what house looks like the devil built it to trap souls. That is exactly the house that I think the devil would build to trap souls with. So they got it right in that sense.
Yeah, and you can actually Google Lannbister, which is Lannbister. You can Google Lannbister Lifehouse, and it shows up.
That is called Lifehouse seems kind of like personally provocative, aimed at me. Yeah, I do not like brutalist and minimalist architecture. If you can't tell, listener, I have strong opinions on architecture.
Since we're down this road, may I read this thing to you about it?
Yeah, for sure.
So expertly designed by the celebrated architect John Paulson, CBE, which I'm not sure what that, do you know what CBE is on the end of a name, like the title? Like,
I think it's an oil that they extract from plants.
It just got legal here in Missouri, too.
Did it really?
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, okay. He's a knight. That's what it is.
Okay. I was thinking like certified board engineer, something like that.
Yeah, but that's what I was thinking too. But it's commander of the Order of the British Empire. It's the highest ranking order of the British Empire award.
Wow.
So he's not a knight, but that's the next best thing, I guess.
Okay, cool.
So back to this. In collaboration with philosopher Alan de Botton, which I jack that all up. This is an unsurpassed sanctuary of beauty and simplicity, specifically created to restore the soul and to contemplate life and all its timeless glory. Here's the one I wanted to get you with. Inspired by Henry David Thoreau's classic Walden. A reflection upon simple living and natural surroundings. You'll find Lifehouse amongst the rolling, unspoilt Welsh hills near the sleepy village of Lannbister.
I mean,
I want to rent this thing. I want to go there.
If you do, let me know. I'll start auditioning co-host guests because you'll be trapped there forever, but I will try to come visit.
Spoiler alert. Last week, I killed my wife. That's why I was off.
Spoiler alert, too. Derek had a wife.
Yeah. That's a spoiler alert for everybody, even me.
So here's the deal, man. Whoever wrote that is right that Thoreau would like the Welsh countryside, but Thoreau laying eyes on that monstrosity would, I mean, it wasn't hard to get him to do this, but he would immediately run into the woods and never come back out.
So there's more. Would you like for me to read this next paragraph?
Keep laying it on, because this is an epic example of bullcrapping your way through by whoever wrote this.
Constructed from handmade Danish bricks, Lifehouse is set on one level, filled with seemingly endless amounts of space to discover. Well, no kidding. We found that out in this movie.
Kevin Bacon is still there.
With its beached wood, gleaming terrazzo floors, and bare-bricked walls that reflect natural light, there's no clutter or extraneous detail here. Indeed, Marie Kondo would be proud.
Dude, this is for the person who has seen the Rock of Gibraltar and thought, oh, that looks cozy.
Yeah.
Who wants to go sleep on cold granite? We got your Airbnb right here.
Mokes. It cost $1,000 a night.
Okay. You know what's not in danger of getting any of my $1,000, the few that I have?
The Lifehouse. Yeah, so it's 3-bedroom, 3-bath. It sleeps 6 people. You have to have a minimum stay of 3 nights. And well, I don't know the exchange rate from pounds to dollars, but it's 1,050 pounds.
It's probably more than 1,000 then. I would imagine if that's a euro that it's going to cost even more.
Yeah.
And all I know for sure is that the brutalist engineers who designed like Pripyat for Russia back before Chernobyl went off saw that thing and were like, no, that's some good ideas you got there. You're going for totally soulless and exhausted by life. Yeah. Lifehouse it is.
So it's available on my birthday.
I mean, there's worse places to go celebrate a birthday, I'm assuming, than Wales.
Yeah, but I mean, we still have a travel ban on Europe, so I can't do that.
Of course.
Can't do anything fun when you're 35.
You can't do anything fun at Lifehouse either. I feel like the only people who are interested in Lifehouse actually are the neighbors from Christmas Vacation, like the Julia Louis-Dreyfus character.
Yeah.
I know you said you'd like to stay there, but I don't believe you'd find that enjoyable, sir.
Yeah, I you're probably right.
Based on my belief, you have a soul.
There is an article from walesonline.co.uk. The headline is, you can hire You can hire. You can hire an isolated house in the Welsh in a Welsh valley for thinking and reflecting and reading retreats.
Thinking enriching.
A stay at the Lifehouse is designed to immerse the visitor in a zone of extreme calm.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Sure it is. For psychopaths. Yeah, on that hire thing, that's a European, I guess it's colloquialism, right? They talk about hiring cars when they get an Uber or a taxi.
I got you.
Yeah, man, that house, I really hate the house, but it works as like, yeah, the devil built this and then a wizard killed it for God and then the devil built it back. I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, I'm here. I'm here for that. Yeah. It's Sauron's Tower, just built in 2016.
It's, it was created by Otis Warbucks. Isn't that what we're calling Bill Paxton's character in Frailty?
Yes, yes. What about the shopkeeper down in the town? That role in this story is so bizarre to me that this guy's clearly aware the devil lives in his zip code. And he uses this weird, gross house up on a hill to trap souls forever. And the dude's in his shop, meaning he's not trapped in the house forever. And he's like, here's what you need. You need an angle. Go measure the walls. Not, call your kid and run for your life. No, no, no. Have some fun getting freaked out when you realize the walls don't line up straight.
Yeah. Well, I guess to, no pun intended on this, but to play devil's advocate, if somebody came to me or if I'm taking a vacation with friends and family in a remote part of the world that I've never been to before, and I go to a little shop and the old man that takes too long to get my grocery says, the devil lives there. I'd probably be like, okay, Papa. How about you just give me my eggs and my beef and let's get out of here.
Yeah, but don't you try it. I mean, here's the deal. I would do that too, but I would want him to be creeped out by me so much that he leaves because he knows I know where he's staying.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's a good point too.
I'm going to try it. I'm going to try something. I'm going to like make a creepy comment about his wife or something because I don't want him trapped forever in Purgatory House. Which is what this, I mean, I know that it's supposed to be hell, a hell of your own creation.
Excuse me. Yeah.
But the fact that he actually lives there forever doesn't seem so much like hell as it does purgatory. Because, we know that he's going to see the scenes of his time there playing back in front of him.
Because
we see that in the movie a bunch, which means he's going to see his daughter there all the time.
Right.
But he can't interact with her. And that just feels more purgatorial than hell. But
yes.
I
don't know,
maybe I have my theology messed up on that.
No, I think you're right. I think that this house is purgatory. I don't think it's a hell at all. I think it is purgatory for sure. Maybe. I think he's trying to atone for the big bad sin. I guess let's just get into it. I think that the reason his marriage with Susudio, what's her name?
We'll go with that.
Cypher. Yeah. I forget what her. She's so non-existent in this movie, man. Like I don't know her name. But I think that his marriage with Susudio is so on the rocks is because he has such guilt.
Sure.
About what he did to his first wife. As a matter of fact, I thought it was telling when he says something to her after she takes her bath, and she goes, "Man, Catholic school really effed you up." And for me, that was like the nail in the coffin where I was like, oh, okay, so that's the gimmick they're going with. It's going to be, this is a purgatory type place. So I think that he is trying to stay in this house to atone for, what's going on because, hey, had he just left, right? Like that's the name of the movie. You should have left. Had he just left his marriage instead of allowing this woman to die, he still more than likely would have met Susudio, and they would have gotten married and they would have had this child, but he would have been happier. He wouldn't have been carrying around this enormous guilt and this enormous weight on his shoulders. Likewise for Seyfried, I think she could have stayed at the house because obviously, she's having an affair on Kevin Bacon's character, but she is trying her hardest to act like everything's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's why it was sent to both of them. Because remember, she says, I can't believe you wanted to come here. And he's like, well, I can't believe you wanted to come here.
Right.
And she said, well, you sent me the link. No, you sent me the link. Well, I think that the devil sent them both the link.
Sure, because they both belong there.
Yeah, and was just trying to prey on whoever felt the most guilty. And I think that was Kevin Bacon.
Huh. Oh, that's really insightful, Derek. I think you're onto something there, and that it actually kind of makes the movie more interesting to me. So, I mean, him writing in his own journal in the past, you should have left, is kind of a metaphor for what his conscience has been telling him ever since he just let his wife drown in the tub.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's really good. That seriously improves this movie by about a factor of 15 for me.
Oh, well, good. I'm glad.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, more sophisticated. I mean, honestly, as I said, it kind of works as a short better, but you've shown me a layer of the plot that I didn't realize was there, which doesn't fix the problem of it being stretched too thin, but it at least mitigates it a bit.
Yeah, well, good. Good. I'm glad that I could at least help a little bit, because, I mean, I feel the same way that you do. This movie should have been, in my opinion, it could have been a short, and it could have been a lot better than what it was, but we had to go down these really weird rabbit holes instead of focusing on stuff like what I just said. You know, had they made it more, and it felt like that anytime we were trying to get to the meat of the movie, it would just go away.
Yeah.
Right. The ending of this movie is ridiculously short. I mean, he just says, yeah, I killed her, and that's why I got to stay. And if I'm Amanda Seyfried's character, I'm like, what the crap are you talking about? You've got to stay. Like, why do you have to stay at this house just because you let your wife drown? Mm-hmm. Like, that doesn't make sense to me. And you never get the payoff on that. So essentially, it's one of those movies where you and I have to come on here and try to make sense of it instead of, oh yeah, that may, you know, oh yeah, what a great resolution we had here. Even if he would have been, you know, even if the ending stays the same and he stays in the house, if he would have just out of all the exposition we get in this movie, the part that matters the most, we don't get exposition on. It's just, it's really, to me, it's really infuriating.
That's, I mean, dude, you're the most interesting part of this movie at this point to me. I can listen to you talk. I mean, lay everything out here.
Well, it's just, you know, you're looking at, I just feel like that had he kissed his daughter goodbye and went to his, you know, went to Sue's studio and said, look, this is the reason why I have to stay. I'm, you know, I let her go. I let her die. And just said everything that I've said before, right? If I just would have left, if I just would have, you know, if I would have saved her and I just would have admitted to myself that I was unhappy and left the marriage, I would have met you. We would have had our daughter. Things would be better. But instead, they're not. And now I have to suffer for my actions. And I can't leave. I can't, you know, this is what I have to do. This is the price I have to pay for the decisions I've made in my life. And I'll always love you. And I'm sorry that things didn't, you know, I'm sorry that this is the way that it has to be. But just make sure that she knows that she was the most important thing, you know, she's the most important thing in my life. And then he goes in the house and he's there and he tries to atone for his sins. Like, why the F were all those pictures on the walls at the end of the movie?
I mean, those are like what? Those are victims that have been claimed, right? But I guess they just, they're out of rotation now. I don't get it.
Well, and see, that's what I'm saying. Why don't you have this cool visual, but it means nothing if you're not going to explain it.
Yeah, for
like
sure.
Like even
you imply it, but you don't take the time to actually make us understand how it works, since he's not running into any of them.
Right. Even if he would have went into a secret room and you see these Polaroids of these people, and then you see the dates that they'd rented the house. Like anything, man.
Yeah.
But instead we're talking about the female orgasm, and we're watching him walk through these hall. Like, dude, I get it. Mm-hmm. The rooms don't make sense. You don't have to keep showing me that 18 different times.
Yep. And like, I get also that this brick is painted gray, dark gray, and this brick is painted black. And that's really cool, you know?
Yeah. You know, and you don't have to continually beat me over the head with your religious allegories, man. Like, I get it. This is purgatory. I get it. Statler is Satan. I get all of that. But show me the interesting parts of this movie and then explain the interesting parts of this movie so that I don't have to come onto a podcast and try to spit for an hour on theories and stuff that are better than your freaking movie.
Perfect rant, dude. I mean, honestly, seriously, this is just listening to you is the most interesting part of this movie experience for me. So
thank you. I appreciate that.
I think you're spot on. I think it's hot fire. And I almost wish we'd had this. Like, I wish you'd have watched it explained all this to me, and then I could have watched the movie because I'd be into it more.
Yeah. I just wish that there would have been a moment where he, you know, where he talks to Amanda Seyfried and he says, maybe you should stay too.
Sure. Sure.
You know, because she had it. I mean, what's the one thing that we like to tout in Christianity, right? No sin is greater than another sin. All sin is sin, for all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. Like, those are big time things, man. So if you're going to, you know, if you're going to have to go to purgatory for killing somebody, then you probably should have to go to purgatory for cheating on your husband.
Yeah. Yeah. Dude, I feel that. And again, they really do seem to love each other. Like, she's remorseful. He says, no, I do. I love you.
Yeah.
Like, they could have made that creepy purgatory house a home. Now, like his daughter, he probably wants Seyfried's character to have a chance to grow up and meet a boy and have a future, you know, when she turns 19.
Right.
But in the trope of the film itself, like, there could be worse things than bringing your family up in an eternal home.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, heck, man, we saw Pet Sematary do it last year.
For sure. For sure. I mean, you've already provided a much better movie than the one we got, even working with the material we did get. I mean, I kind of come back full circle at this point. I didn't realize it to the degree I do now, but when we first started talking, I said, I think there's elements here for a really good movie. Mm-hmm. I just don't think we got it. And I think I'm more convinced of that now than I was when we started.
Yeah. It's frustrating, man. It's frustrating to watch a movie that you see has tons of potential, and instead of giving you everything that you're interested in, they give you everything that you're not interested in.
Yeah.
And that was my experience with this movie.
Yeah. I think that's a fair and fitting summary of it. Do we want to get to our questions?
Yeah, absolutely, man. Did we see something scary?
All right. So this is a bizarre answer. I have, once upon a time, my daughter, I thought was behind me, behind my wife. My wife thought she was behind me as we went into a theater in Chattanooga to watch a IMAX movie. And she disappeared. And she was gone for probably like 12 to 15 minutes, like longer than 10 minutes.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was watching the kids sweating bullets. And we ended up finding her just exactly the way these systems are supposed to, where like she had went to a worker there and they had her and we got her. It ended fine.
Yeah.
But when the little girl goes to get her jacket and she runs out the door and he realizes she didn't come through the other side of the door frame, that got me just a little bit. Like it kind of provoked those memories. And so I'm going to say, yeah, I saw one thing in this movie that scared, and it's probably highly idiosyncratic just to me, but it got me. So, yes. Yeah.
I'm going to say no.
I'm not surprised
on this. But I mean, And I'm not saying that for you isn't wrong. I'm just saying that I don't have that personal connection to it, mm-hmm. So I can't agree with you on it. But yeah, there really wasn't anything in this. I cringed a couple times, but I don't think that that's the same thing as being scared.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so then scale of 1 to 10, what would you give it?
3.5.
Okay.
A full point and a half for the little girl. Another point for Kevin Bacon. And there were some pretty shots in this movie.
Hmm.
Like there was some cool cinematography, but yeah. And I may even be generous by saying 3.5, but I think that's where I'm going to land. I think that, like you said, there were parts of this movie that I was enjoying. I just hate the fact that we slow burn and then we fizzle, you know?
Yeah.
If you're going to slow burn, man, set it on fire at the end of it.
Sure.
Don't just, you know, don't light the fuse and then have one of these dud fireworks. And I feel like that's what happened with this movie.
Yeah, man. Give us a payoff. That's for sure.
Potential wise, this movie should have been a 6 or 7. But unfortunately, we got a 3.5.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I mean, largely I'm in agreement with you. Like whatever is just below perfectly acceptable horror, I didn't come away regretting I'd spent the time watching this movie, but I was disappointed in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm probably going to be 3.5 to 4 there too, just for the same reasons. I thought it was good to see Kevin Bacon. I don't think he's worked since like 2016. I'd like to get some more of him while he's available, you know?
Yeah.
The little girl was awesome. The one scene. And honestly, you've probably bumped it up a point just with elaborating on the metaphor at the heart and kind of how it adds another layer to the film. So I'll join you with 3.5. Left my own devices, I may have went as high as 4, but it's just below mid-tier.
Yeah, I don't think this is a I don't think this is a movie that you want to pay money to rent. But if it ever comes on like a Netflix or a Hulu or a Shudder, I don't think you're going to waste your time watching this movie per se.
Yeah.
But I definitely like I rented it off of Vudu, and I feel like I've wasted money.
Sure.
By renting it. But for something that I'm already paying for and, you know, that it's part of the deal, I would say, sure. Take a chance on it, and maybe you'll like it more than we did.
Yeah.
Maybe now that you've heard this podcast about it, you'll go into it with a different attitude than I think that you and I had with it.
Yeah, for sure. I just felt like it was an underachiever, and if your expectations are lowered, that may not be the case anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know what lower expectations are, you know what expectations aren't lowered for, Jeff Wright?
What's that?
Manscaped.
Yeah, baby.
That's right. Manscaped is dedicated to helping you level up your full body grooming game. And they forever change the grooming game with their Perfect Package 3.0. Now, this Perfect Package 3.0 kit comes with the Essential Lawnmower 3.0, waterproof cordless body trimmer, and tons of other liquid formulations to round out your manscaping routine. And I'm telling you, man, these other, as they call them, liquid formulations, some of the best smelling stuff I think I've ever put on my body. I don't know if you'd agree with that or not, but I'm going to say it.
Yeah, I have a long-term cologne that I prefer. But the thing I like about this scent is that it's unambiguously masculine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I smell like a dude. I don't feel like my wife could wear it. And, you know, people would be like, hey, wait a minute. Why are you wearing men's cologne? Like, I feel like it's masculine. And sometimes I don't feel that way about other products aimed at men.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you on that.
If you ask me, by the way, what it means to smell masculine, I have no idea. But this stuff triggers that part of my brain and says that smells masculine.
Yeah, it smells like you could go out and kill and field dress a deer.
There you go, buddy. Maybe I will.
All while smelling great for your lady.
Just shave it bald with my Manscaped trimmer.
That's right. You can. This third, and the great thing about it is that this third generation trimmer features a skin safe technology. So you wouldn't even get any of that deer jerky, man. It'd just be all hair. You can adjust the settings to whatever kind of length you want, and you can stay on top of it with almost no effort at all. You'll also find that for a limited time, you'll get two free gifts, the Shed Travel Bag, which is a $39 value, and the patented high-performance reduced chafing Manscaped Boxer Briefs. And have I talked about these Boxer Briefs on the show before?
I think just a little, but
I'd
like to hear more.
I'm in love with them. They are, without question, the best boxer briefs I've ever had in my entire life. And I would say that with or without the sponsorship. Like, if I need to reach out to our guy Kyle at Manscaped and see if I can just get more boxer briefs. Like, I'll pay for them, but I need at least 14 more. So I can just go 2 weeks with a different pair of Manscaped boxer briefs on. But hey, here's the good news for you guys. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARYPOD over at manscaped.com. Do yourself a favor. Get the right tools for your family jewels. Manscaped.com. Put in the promo code SCARYPOD. 20% off and free shipping. Thank you guys over at Manscaped. We appreciate your support. And we hope that you guys will check those guys out as well. That may have been the best read we've ever done, Jeff.
Hey, everybody's getting some Manscaped now.
That's right. Everybody's on board. Oh, all right, man. Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode. Obviously, we want to know what you guys think. So head over to the Facebook group, We Saw Something Scary, and let us know your thoughts on this movie. If you've seen it, if you plan on seeing it, what you thought of mine and Jeff's review of the movie. Were we too harsh on the movie? Were we just right on the movie? You let us know what you think. Also, while you're out on the interwebs, please do us a favor. Head over to Apple Podcasts. Give us those coveted 5-star reviews on the podcast. That will help us. That'll help our algorithm. It'll help more people who are horror lovers find our podcast and be part of the group. And then, of course, if you want to partner with us, and man, do we appreciate you guys that do. If you want to partner with us, you go to patreon.com/scarypodcast, and you can be a part of our Patreon, and you'll get a free bonus episode each and every month. Last month we did Unsolved Mysteries. This month, I'm not sure what we're going to do, but it's going to be great. And it's only, it's exclusively on patreon.com. So if you're loving what we're bringing to the main feed, hop over there as well and get that bonus episode each and every month. He's at Right Jeff. I'm at Derek Zoo. We're out of time. Thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you guys for your patience on a new episode. Thank you for understanding when personal things come up that no one expects. And thank you for allowing me to have the time off to take care of those things as well. We'll be back next week. What are we doing next week? We're doing that that gimmick that everyone's liking on Shudder.
Relic. Yep.
Yeah. And is that the one?
I think Becky is a nice number two there. So maybe the next 2 weeks we knock out Relic and Becky.
Okay. Is that about Becky Lynch?
Yes. That's going to make you want to watch it even more.
Dude, I'm in all the way. Yeah. Oh, man. That means I got to get Shudder again.
Dun, dun, dun.
You win this round, Shudder. All right. So Relic next week, Becky the week after that. And then who knows? But we'll be back next week with a brand new episode. Until then, we want to remind you to stay away from clowns in sewers, blind men with turkey basters, and white people with teacups. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye, man.